Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Not tonight. James Edwards is taking the night off tonight. And sitting in for James Edwards, I am Bill Rowland. And we've had a fantastic show so far. We're into the third hour now. If you're just now tuning in, welcome to the show. We are broadcasting, as always, from WLRM 1380 in Memphis and Millington. And this hour, we're going to take some callers. And first, I'm going to open up the show a little bit to get some topics percolating. But as I said in our previous hour, we had Brother Nathaniel, who's always dynamic, always straightforward, always delivers his message with force and conviction. And certainly we want to have Brother Nathaniel back on. But the theme of this show has really been more religion and Christianity and the falsehood of some of the doctrines and practices of mainstream Christian churches in America today. And, you know, Brother Nathaniel gives us a sharp contrast to that, because of course he was raised as a Jew, but converted and became an Orthodox street evangelist, Russian Orthodox street evangelist. And there's so much difference between the religious standards and practices of an Orthodox church compared with that of the more evangelical, almost always more liberal mainstream Christian churches in America. So, keeping with that theme, I want to mention, first of all, there was an interesting news story. Before I get into any more of the religion aspect of the show or topics, an interesting note today on Google News that I picked up, and that is that a group called the Council for Responsibility and Ethics in Congress, or CREW, came out with a statement attacking and criticizing and accusing Christine O'Donnell, the newly nominated Republican senatorial candidate in Delaware, of misappropriating campaign funds. And actually, the actual quote from this CREW group was that Christine O'Donnell's campaign expenditures were flat out illegal. Well, this CREW group, as has happened with the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL and some of the other alphabet soup liberal leftist groups in this country, is given the weight of credibility and the force of authority by the media. That is, if CREW comes out and says something about your campaign finances, then they have researched and they have studied and they have really gone for the facts. And here they're going to present this to the American people, and it must be true because CREW said it's true. Well, the same thing has happened in the media, of course, with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Anytime this show is mentioned in a newspaper article or is brought up in a news broadcast or is otherwise given some publicity, the media, the reporters and the journalists covering the story inevitably go to the Southern Poverty Law Center and scratch around and find some quotation or get some comment from the Southern Poverty Law Center about the political cesspool or the Council of Conservative Citizens or some other group, as if to say, well, this is the authority of record for what you really are. We don't care what you say you are. We don't care what you do. Whatever the Southern Poverty Law Center says you are and what you do is what is the truth. And this is what we are going to print or publish or broadcast is only what the Southern Poverty Law Center says. In other words, they have the seal of disapproval on any organization that they consider to be hateful or racist or extremist. They have all the big IST words, the big IST suffix words lined up so that these are rolled out on top of different groups to try to smear them. Well, Crewe is a very similar type of outfit. And what was interesting is that this group has come out and attacked Christine O'Donnell for her use of campaign finances. The director of Crewe, the Council for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, is one Melanie Sloan. Melanie Sloan has been a democratically connected politician of sorts all of her life. She's been involved in Washington politics for most of her working life until this organization was formed in 2003. Ms. Sloan not only has worked for many liberal Democrats like John Conyers, she was also heavily involved in politics and the Washington scene with Joe Biden, whose seat Christine O'Donnell is now trying to win. So this is one of the non-biased, non-partisan groups that's covering the election in Delaware and immediately launches a nasty attack against Christine O'Donnell. I don't know much about Christine O'Donnell's politics, but I can see what's going on with Crewe, plain as day. Ms. Sloan is a partisan for Joe Biden, and under the cloak of respectability that this bogus group, Crewe, gives, she attacks Christine O'Donnell for a few dollars in campaign expenditures. Meanwhile, in her own words, Ms. Sloan says that they have just recently discovered that Charlie Rangel has been involved in some financial scandals of his own. Just recently, they have begun to address Charles Rangel of New York's scandals involving finance. The Rangel issue and the investigation of Rangel's taxes and his finances has been going on for 2 years, but Ms. Sloan and Crewe have only just discovered that maybe he's, you know, hasn't spent money properly, and maybe they'll look into it. This is a flat-out attack on Christine O'Donnell from the left. There's probably no truth at all to what Crewe has said. But what we do know is that they have an agenda. Crewe, in fact, according to some sources, has received much funding and much support from none other than our old globalist nemesis, George Soros. So once again, Soros sticks his finger in yet another political pudding and once again is trying to shoot down a candidate who now has not only raised the anger and wrath of the Democratic Party in Delaware, but also the Republican establishment, because she beat the candidate that they favored. They didn't want her. They wanted somebody else who didn't really represent the people, somebody who would play along with the Republican establishment. So that little piece of news, as far as I know, we have just broken that story on the political cesspool, but check it out for yourself. Check out the Crewe group and Ms. Sloan. Interesting picture of her. She looks familiar. We'll be right back with more talk on the political cesspool.
Don't go away. There's more political cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Actually, James Edwards has put out the Do Not Disturb sign tonight. He has taken the night off to have a little fun with his beautiful bride. And instead, you've got me, Bill Rowland, covering for James. And as I said, we had in the previous hour, we had Brother Nathaniel Kapner, great guest, great talk from Brother Nathaniel. He really hit the airwaves hard, and I think probably sent a message to some people who didn't really want to hear the message. But that's good, because it was true, it was forceful, and it was dynamic. We are taking callers tonight, and the number, as our good friend Art just told you, is 866-986-6397. That is toll-free. Call if you have something on your mind, something you want to discuss from tonight's show or a recent show. But as I was saying before the break, was talking about Christine O'Donnell's campaign in Delaware. She was the Tea Party candidate. She was the one who was not supposed to win. She had been really under attack or receiving a lot of criticism during the election, but she still won out, beat the Republican. Then she was given no chance by the Democrats or by the media of winning the general election, but now things are changing a little, and so this organization called CRU, or Council for the Council for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, has come out claiming that O'Donnell is in fact cheating the system and pocketing campaign funds or something. But of course, as we said, they're a left-wing outfit connected with Joe Biden through their director, Melanie Sloan. But let's get to the Tea Party issue for a second, because the Tea Party movement is having problems of its own. And as any of you who read the blogs on the Political Cesspool website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, already know, we at the Political Cesspool have never been entirely convinced that the Tea Party movement was going to be a success. And the reason we were never convinced that this was the best way, particularly for white people, to express their outrage at a rotten, corrupt, costly, backwards, evil system in many ways, was because the leadership was not really there to direct this energy and keep it going. And as happens with many organizations that have no obvious head or leadership, the Republicans stepped in and simply took over and claimed that they were the leaders and the motivation and the actual force guiding the Tea Party movement. It was a complete lie. Sarah Palin didn't start nor even recognize the Tea Party movement until it began gathering thousands and thousands of people all over the country at Tea Party rallies. Then all of a sudden, the Republicans particularly wake up and say, oh, well, that's our organ. We're doing that. That's our people. And they rush in and try to take over a movement that started at the grassroots and was started by concerned, upset, angry white people who wanted to express themselves and for the first time in my memory actually went to the streets and went to rallies and carried signs in order to express their outrage at what was going on in Washington, in government, and in the system in general, and to speak out against the New World Order. But the Republicans saw the opportunity and, like a pack of coyotes, ran in and suddenly decided, because they had power and prestige, that they were leaders. And Glenn Beck is the most recent phenomenon to take the stage and claim some sort of leadership over the Tea Party movement. But, of course, what has happened is that these same so-called leaders have watered down the crowds, have diluted the message, have put a cap on the dialogue, and are now redirecting the Tea Party into just another Republican movement, another Republican bureau or office of some sort, an agency of the GOP. And in order to make sure that this Tea Party movement doesn't take on a racial dimension, they now only talk about on different websites how diverse the Tea Party movement really is. The diversity within the Tea Party movement is really the strength that holds it together, which is an absolute falsehood. I went to a Tea Party movement in April of 2009, and there wasn't a black, brown, or yellow face in the crowd. It was all white people. And there were no politicians on the podium speaking out about how wonderful they would be if they could only get to Washington. There were only ordinary people, including speakers like scoutmasters and ordinary preachers from churches and people who were just ordinary people getting up and speaking. it wasn't the best sort of way to conduct a Tea Party, but or a rally. But nevertheless, this was honest grassroots representation of the people. Republicans haven't done that for white people really ever. They pretended to do it just to get the southern white vote, but they've never represented white people. They were called the Black Republicans during the Civil War, and all the South was Democratic. But that's a history lesson. Let's talk again about the Tea Parties and where the Tea Parties are really going to be taken by people like Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, and Dick Armey. Now, Dick Armey's been out of the loop, out of the political loop for quite a while. The Texas Republican who was in Congress, he's, I think, Lebanese or some other Middle Eastern extraction. Once again, not an Anglo-Saxon. But he stepped forward early in the game and simply laid claim, like a conquistador with a flag, just laid claim to the Tea Party movement and announced that he was one of the leaders, which was, again, a flat-out lie. But he had plenty of clout with the media. He got plenty of publicity. And so, at least on the part of the media, Dick Armey is a leader of the Tea Party movement. Well, one of the recent developments has been the Diversity, the clever transformation of the Tea Party movement into a diverse, multicultural, love fest. Or big group hug. And the Diversity movement, of course, is the brainchild, or at least mainly sponsored or advocated by Dick Armey. And I saw something interesting on their website, a quote, which lists and says, which again, completely ludicrous, that we are black and white, we are all colors and creeds, all religions, etc., etc. And then they said something interesting. We are Jews and Gentiles. Why wasn't it Christians and Jews? Are most of the Tea Party participants not Christians, not white Christians? Who are they? Why wasn't Christian used instead of Gentile? Gentile is a word that is used by Jews to refer to Christians. Why couldn't they have been called Christians and Jews? Because, like white people in general, Christianity is being set up or driven into extinction, or so the Antichrists believe. So, here's where the Tea Party movement is going. Under the so-called leadership of people like Dick Armey, like Sarah Palin, and like Glenn Beck, you're creating yet another rainbow coalition, another failed attempt at political manipulation. And unless the Tea Party movement and the people who participate in these things stand up, there ain't no more tea in the pot. We'll be back.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
And welcome back to the show. We're in the last stretch here, the last 30 minutes of the Political Cesspool radio program. Once again, I am Bill Rowland, sitting in for James Edwards, who decided to play hooky tonight, to go off and have fun or watch a concert or something. But he has called in to announce that he's having the time of his life, but, you know, he just can't let go. He's got to call in and make sure that everything is up and running. But, of course, here at LNR, we're having a big time, and obviously you are too, because you're out there, and we know you are, and we love our audience, and we do the best we can to bring you a great show every week. And as Art told you, we are taking callers tonight. And, of course, I know I'm not as sexy and charming as James Edwards, but if you got something on your mind, give us a call, 866-986-6397. And do remember, if you call, to turn your radio down so we don't get the nasty feedback and all the noise that would prevent your intelligent comments from going over the air. Now, as I was talking about before, the Tea Party movement is straying from its original course, is wandering off in the wilderness, following behind a bunch of self-serving Republicans who want nothing else but to take control of it and turn it into yet another multicultural fiasco. And these people have no idea and can't seem to grasp what's going on in this country. They can't seem to understand it. They don't get it. Recently, in Germany, a member of the World Bank, OS, came out with a book deeply and harshly critical of what was taking place in Germany through the tentacles of multiculturalism and what is happening in Germany because of their mass immigration and their failure to control who comes into Germany and really who comes into Germany and what they do, what they get away with. Well, this man, who obviously is not part of the right wing of Europe, is not some sort of outcast in his own country because he really believes that Germany is for Germans. He, as I said, was a highly placed official in the World Bank, German Central Bank, actually, and very much part of the Euro economy. And what's more, this man, whose name is Thilo Sarrazin, is a socialist. He's not at all conservative, or a member of the Christian Democrats, or any of the other traditional conservative parties in Germany. He's a socialist. And yet, he's written this book, very harsh words about Germany and what's taking place there as far as this immigration debacle that they have put themselves into. And, you know, many of the things he says, you wouldn't hear a Republican say in this country if he was being told to walk the plank. It's amazing to me that from what is a center-left political party in Germany comes this, strong criticism of what has happened in terms of immigration in Germany. Now, he wrote this book, and actually I'm trying to find the name of it now. I don't know if I have the name in English, but he wrote this book critical of immigration in Germany, and of course he lost or was forced to resign forced to resign from the Bundesbank because of his comments and because of what he wrote. But nevertheless, the book is a bestseller in Germany, and people are rising up and saying, this man needs to be our next chancellor, the next leader of Germany. He is getting tremendous support from Germans all over his country for taking a strong and courageous stand against turning Germany into a third world country. So, remember that when a real leader comes forward in the United States, they'll be resonating, their words will resonate and echo in the ears of whoever is out there listening, and they'll say, this is the man, or this is the person who understands the problem, and this is the person we need to elect. Ron Paul attempted it. Ron Paul tried. He got out there, and he stood his ground, and he said what needed to be said, and people did follow him. But for some mysterious reason, he didn't even show up as a significant factor in the polls. Makes me wonder about whether our elections should be monitored by the UN. As we constantly remind everyone else in the world, we are the world's greatest democracy, the greatest republic, whatever other sales pitch we use on the world. But and any time there's elections coming up in a country, we're not sure that the outcome is going to be to our liking. We want to monitor those elections, make sure that the outcome is the way we want it, not the way the people want it. But in this country, you know, a phenomenon, a man who had built such a huge following and was getting so much attention as Ron Paul, for some reason, his election just disappears into the weeds and is never heard from again. So, you know, I think that's very strange, and it makes me wonder about whether our elections are actually honest and our elections are actually as accurate as most voters think they are. But moving on to something, and I hope I'm bringing up a controversial topic here. The theme of this show, the theme of the political cesspool tonight, has really been on track as far as discussions of religion, of Christianity. In the first hour, Keith Alexander and I discussed mainstream churches in the United States, also rushing to embrace multiculturalism and cultural Marxism, really, and how they are throwing their children, white Christian children, into ghettos to serve the ghetto, culture. But, then we moved on to Brother Nathaniel, who says many of the same things, but also talks about the Jews and their hatred of Jesus Christ. And now, I think that it's important to bring up another point that has to do with Christianity, religion, and false idols. And there's one false idol in this country that most people don't realize they worship, and yet they worship it, and it's not only a false idol, it's a dead god. It doesn't have power. It's, as the Bible talks about false idols, they're dumb, made of wood or stone. They have no soul. This false idol is the Constitution of the United States. Many of you out there would be appalled to hear that this document is worthless and has been worthless for many years. It was worthless from the beginning. It was worthless from the beginning because no one has ever sustained the Constitution as it was written. Not even the first president, not the second president. They all tried to get around it. They all tried to subvert it. Only one man that I know of was a true constitutionalist and believed in the document as written and that it should be the law of the land, and that was Patrick Henry. One of the few with any name recognition who held to the Constitution and saw it for what it was. It's a document about government. It's not the Holy Grail. It's not the final word in political discourse. Patrick Henry saw from the beginning that the Constitution was in danger, which meant that it was weak from the beginning. There was something wrong. We can no longer hold this false idol up in one hand and the Bible in the other and say, now we're going to win. Put the Constitution down and hold up the Bible, because we've come to the point in this country where we can no longer talk about what the Constitution ought to do for us. The Constitution's not going to do a thing for anybody. It's a dead letter. It's a piece of paper. It's an empty voice. It is not being enforced anywhere. It hasn't been enforced for years. Stop playing games. Stop acting like children. The only hope for this country is a return or an embrace or a conversion, whatever term you want to use, to genuine, true, submissive, worshipful Christianity. That's it. The Constitution is finished. Stop holding it up like a child holding up a toy. It's not real. It doesn't exist for us anymore, particularly white people, and that's what I'm talking about. Because the Constitution was written for, and intended to protect white people. Because at the time it was written, slavery was the law of the land. We'll talk more about that on the next segment right after this break.
Go away, the political cesspool guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Well, sorry to disappoint you. This is not James Edwards. This is Bill Rowland. And we're back for the last 15 minutes or so of the show. And it's been a great show. I've really enjoyed myself here tonight, and Brother Nathaniel Kapner in the second hour and Keith Alexander in the first hour. It's just flown by. I mean, I'm always amazed at how fast 3 hours goes by when I'm on the political festival, but it's flown by. A couple of things before we go off the air. First, always remember to go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, check out our blog, and, of course, buy another copy of James Edwards' book, Racism, Schmacism. If you don't already have five copies, you need six because it comes in a set of six because you've got to give them away for Christmas. Christmas is coming up, as Denny reminded me. So, you know, keep a copy to give to someone else. It's very important. It's really important to spread that book around because, for one thing, it's not a dead serious look at the situation in this country and the racial issues that we deal with on this show. It's got some lighthearted moments in it. It will cheer you up and yet get you focused as well. So remember to go to our website, blogs every day, and really one of the best websites for finding out what's going on in the country and what interests you as well. As I was saying before the break, the problem we have right now in this country, and I'm speaking to you white people out there, is that we have let ourselves be distracted by things that don't matter anymore. And I mentioned the United States Constitution. And if someone had called and said, and I know you're listening out there, Mom, if someone had called and said, well, the Constitution still matters because it's the law of the land, I'd say, which Constitution? The Constitution that was written before the 14th Amendment was enacted, because the 14th Amendment changed the rest of the Constitution. The 14th Amendment essentially neutralized and rendered harmless the rest of the Constitution, because that's the amendment that put civil rights above all of the rights in this country, and which did, absolutely took away the power of the states to direct their own affairs. But people said, well, that's the amendment, you know, where the slaves should have been freed and all this. The point I'm making is that the Constitution that was written originally after the American Revolution did not abolish slavery. And that is a point that people don't want to talk about. They don't want to talk about the Constitution as it was written. They only want to be reminded or to enforce the Constitution they believe should be enforced. This is very much the same attitude that modern Christians have towards Scripture. They only want to believe the parts that make them feel good, that make them feel righteous, that make them feel safe. They don't want to read the Scripture that upsets them. They feel like there's just it's just not right to have all these words that they don't want to hear in the Bible. So they'll concentrate instead on a few scriptures, on talking about Jesus' love and, you know, love your brother and love your neighbor and all the love stuff. But they don't really want to take into account nor accept the power of the rest of the Scripture and what it says. Same is true of the Constitution. The Constitution is dead because no part of it has ever been rigorously enforced and the people have not stood behind one single part of the Constitution in force. When our First Amendment rights are threatened, what do we do? Do we all get out and talk about why it's, you know, the danger to the Constitution of hate crimes, which categorize people according to their attitudes and beliefs as opposed to, you know, what crime they may have actually committed? This is a violation of the First Amendment, saying that you can't think a certain way without being punished for it as part of another crime, or maybe the Second Amendment and the almighty Second Amendment, which protects your rights to keep and bear arms. At the time of the American Revolution, the Continental soldier, the ordinary citizen of this country, any man could buy the state-of-the-art weapon of the time, which was the rifle musket, the better gun than the British had. He could buy the weapon that was better than any other in the world for his own use, for his own defense, for hunting, for any reason at all. A person at that time could also privately own a cannon without the government stepping in to take it away. There were private militias all over this country during the 1800s, the early 1800s anyway. And you could own a cannon without the government stepping in and telling you that you owned a gun that wasn't acceptable to the federal government. Now, do you really think that as a gun owner, as a person who believes in the Second Amendment, that you're able or allowed to own a 50 caliber machine gun, just go in the store and buy one? A state-of-the-art weapon like an air-to-air missile? Of course not. Yet, we talk about our rights under the Second Amendment. Now, I'm not saying that owning one of those weapons is a good idea or that it's even useful for the average citizen. What I'm saying is that if you're going to strictly enforce the Second Amendment, then you should be able to go in any store and buy a Stinger missile or a 50 caliber machine gun or some other weapon without having to ask permission from the federal government. And you're not allowed to do that. And this is true of virtually all the amendments to the Constitution. There's always some little preventative built into it that says, well, this is a right, but you can't have all of it. You can only have the part the government allows you to have. That's not true of the Scriptures. You're allowed to have all of it as part of your faith in Christ. You're allowed all of it. And all of it is in force. All of it has power. And until we return our souls to God, to Jesus Christ, all of these other things we talk about on this show are meaningless. And they have no force. They have no power. I'm not trying to sound like an evangelist. I'm trying to tell you the truth. The reason the Constitution and our laws and our government have become absolutely bent and twisted and perverted is because we began a long time ago to give up the true faith of our fathers, to turn to modern churches the church you go to depends on how big the bowling alley is, or how many activities are offered, or how many friends you can make. That's not the point. Jesus said, "My Father's house is a house of worship, a house of prayer. It's not a house of fun. It's not a fun house. It's not a place you go to meet new people. It's not a place you go for your social life. It's not a place you go to play games. It's a place to worship God." And until we get back to that point, we've lost our direction and we're not going to get it back. And it's not going to happen through the Constitution, and it's not going to happen through the Tea Party, and it's not going to happen through elected officials elective government. It's only going to happen when the souls change. And that's it. Now, again, I didn't mean to get on my soapbox here and start preaching to you all, but nevertheless, you have to accept what's going on in the world to be able to confront and deal with the world. In the Islamic countries, they don't have any restraint when it comes to expressing their faith in Muhammad or in Allah, and they will attack people and punish them if Allah, the Quran, or Muhammad are criticized in the least. And so they're taking over Europe because they have a faith in a false god. Yet their faith alone, even in this false Messiah, even in this false religion, gives them power. Think how much power we would have if we would truly believe and truly put our faith in the real Messiah, in the real power. Then things would begin to change in this country. So, James is going to be back next Saturday. I have no idea who he's going to have as a guest. I have no idea what he has planned for the show, but you can be sure it'll be a good one. And you can be sure that every show you listen to on the political cesspool is going to bring you as much truth as we can pack into 3 hours, and we're going to make sure that we say it in a way that everyone can understand it. We're not going to hide behind terms and not express ourselves in an honest and straightforward fashion. That's why when we talk about white people, we talk about white people instead of some other obscure thing like rights we're not going to put what we're talking about in vague and deceptive terms. We're going to talk about what we're talking about. So when we talk about standard of living or something like that, we're talking about how white people ought to live. Because all these other people, that's their business. It's not our business. But, that's why we get called racist and all kinds of names. Because we talk to you as straightforward and without covering ourselves in falsehood. Thanks for listening. Next week, James Edwards. God bless you all. Bill Rowland, saying goodnight.
To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.